This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, not peace, but pacification, the imperial facade for Annapolis. 44 nations attended Tuesday, November 27th, at the U.S. Military Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. After a seven-year freeze in discussions, the idea was to have a negotiated settlement between the Zionist State of Israel and the Palestinian people, a negotiated settlement by the end of the year 2008, before President Bush leaves as President of the United States in January 2009. There were representatives of the government of the State of Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization. That's what they called it, not the Palestinian Authority, which includes both Hamas and Fatah, but the Palestine Liberation Organization, represented by the PLO Executive Committee Chairman, President Mahmoud Abbas, who is president of the Palestinian Authority, with a meeting December 12th in Moscow and a further meeting in Paris. As I mentioned before, 44 nations attended. Some of them don't even recognize the Zionist state. And what went on? As we mentioned in our title, not peace, but pacification. Ralph?
Maya, in the Israeli, or I should say not Israeli, but the Jewish publication, Tikkun, normally a supporter of this facade of peace processing, which we define as pacification, there's an extremely useful and instructive article by Jeff Halper called When the Roadmap is a One-Way Street, Israel's Strategy for Permanent Occupation. And Halper has a very succinct critique of what this Annapolis conference represents, and indeed what the so-called two-state solution with the Palestinian people is really about. He states, "Those of the left who seek a two-state solution with the Palestinians and thus are willing to relinquish enough of the territories, if not all, in order to a viable Palestinian state may emerge, have to look at what is going on. This is not really the case. Polls in the makeup of the Israeli government make clear that at least a quarter of Israeli Jews fall into the group which refuses any concessions to the population of Palestine, while not more than 10% support any kind of withdrawal from the occupied territories. In fact, virtually no Israeli Jews use the term occupation, which Israel denies formally that it has. The vast majority of Israeli Jews, stretching from the liberal Meretz party through Labor, Kadima, and the liberal wing of the Ikud, accepting the religious parties and the right wing led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the current Minister of Strategic Affairs Avigdor Lieberman, share a broad and insistent consensus. For security reasons and for Israel's facts on the ground, the Arabs, as the Israelis call the Palestinians, will settle at best for a truncated mini-state on no more than perhaps 15% of the country between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River."
And, Ralph, a state it is not. In actuality, it would be a tiny Bantustan on four or five cantons, all encircled by Zionist settlements and the military, and all basically under the control of the Zionist state. The Zionist state controlling agriculture, in other words, anything that is produced must go through the Zionist state to reach markets elsewhere. The Zionist state controlling any arms that are even sent for the policing, the pacification of the Palestinian people. The Zionist state controlling the entry and exit between any of the Palestinian villages and towns and ostensibly the five cantons that would be established.
Indeed, Maya, as it's quite unusual for this particular, this is a critique and analysis that you and I have been making in print and in broadcast and in speeches across many countries over a period of 50 years now. This critique of what the actual underlying politics of Zionist settlement and occupation represent, namely the removal of the Palestinian people from history and from their land, is rarely reflected in the Jewish peace groups, who, after all, are basically oriented around a prospect of what I call, you and I have called, amnesty for Israel. But here Halper confronts the reality, and he states, our power, our all-encompassing preoccupation with security, and the plain fact that for us Arabs don't count except as a nuisance, limit any so-called peace process to at best granting a tiny Bantustan on 4 to 5 cantons. They will all be encircled by settlements and the military. Israeli control of the entire land of Israel is never to be compromised. The answer for the past 40 years of occupation is status quo delay while effectively expanding the settlements and strengthening the grip on Judea and Samaria. Again, we do not use the terms occupation or occupied territories in Israel, not to mention Palestinians. He says, look at the run-up to Annapolis and the negotiations Israel is promising. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said recently, Annapolis is a landmark on the path to negotiations and to achieve the realization of the vision of two nations, the State of Israel, the nation of the Jewish people, and the Palestinian state. Now, that formulation is extremely revealing because it is part of the insistence upon the Israelis that Israel will be defined as a Jewish state. And by so doing, it defines out of existence the nearly 2 million Palestinian population inside the Green Line, the remnant survivor of the 85-90% of the population driven out to a series of massacres in the formation of the Zionist state in 47 and 48.
Ralph, we have to understand the basis for Olmert's position. And Yahoo News on November 30th had an article, Olmert vows to press on with a revived peace push, and it gave Olmert's reason. He reiterated a stance, says the article, stated in an earlier interview, that a two-state solution was essential for Israel's continued existence. As far back as 2003, he said, quote, the status quo was a disaster. I said, if we don't do something, we will lose the possibility of the existence of two states. We will be an apartheid state. Jewish organizations in America will be the first to fight against our existence. So this is where Olmert is coming from. The fact is that he wants basically an exclusive Jewish state, what they call the misnomer, the Jewish democracy.
Well, Maya, it's very Halper is very explicit here about what this project entails. And it affects a full 20% of the Israeli population within the Green Line. And as Halper states, the project is transfer, ethnic cleansing. He quotes Tzipi Livni, Israel's foreign minister, who stated at a press conference, the future of Israel's Arab citizens is in a future Palestinian state, not in Israel itself, i.e., transfer, completing the process of expulsion that was initiated in 47 and 48, of course, in the decades prior, but concentrated through the genocidal ethnic cleansing of that time. And 2 weeks before Annapolis was to convene, the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, passed a law that two-thirds of the Knesset is required to approve any change in the status of Jerusalem. That means in practical terms that the relentless expansion of Jerusalem into all the surrounding areas and cutting off the West Bank from not merely East Jerusalem itself, but all of the Palestinian villages and access routes for a huge area surrounding it effectively excludes the Palestinian population, confining them behind walls, behind barriers, the roads exclusive to the settlement Jews themselves, not to be available to the Palestinian population.
Well, Ralph, we have to mention here that the establishment of East Jerusalem as a capital for any Palestinian mini-state, or whatever you want to call it, a Palestinian entity, has always been a primary condition, and that the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the primary religious institution for the Muslim world, is centered in East Jerusalem and for all the Arab states that East Jerusalem be part of any Palestinian entity has always been a bottom line. And here we have all sectors of the Zionist state saying that the entire Jerusalem shall be part of the Zionist state. And as you mentioned, the Israeli parliament itself passing on the eve of this Annapolis conference this law, this new law that said two-thirds of the Israeli parliament, which means essentially that it would definitely pass, must approve any changes to the boundary of Jerusalem.
Halper states very clearly, the end result towards which Israel has been moving deliberately and systematically can only be called apartheid, which means separation in Afrikaner. Now, separation in Afrikaner is the literal meaning of apartheid, but that is the precise term that Israel has always used to describe its policy. Hafrada in Hebrew means separation. It is apartheid in the strictest sense of the term. One population separating itself from the rest, then dominating them permanently and institutionally, as described quite powerfully by Jeff Halper in this piece.
And Ralph, apartheid basically is what is being proposed by President Bush in his statement that he made at the beginning of the Annapolis conference, because he said explicitly, quote, the settlement will establish Palestine as the Palestinian homeland, just as Israel is the homeland for the Jewish people. Again, we have here that Israel is not an entity, it is not a country, but as President Bush stated clearly, his U.S. policy is the homeland for, quote, the Jewish people. That sets it up as an exclusionary state. And what is the purpose of a Palestinian state in the minds of the U.S. imperial rulers? Quote, they, referring to the Palestinians, must demonstrate that a Palestinian state will create opportunity for all its citizens and govern justly. And this is the stress, the pure stress of the entire Annapolis conference and of all the conferences that preceded it, starting with Madrid in 1991 and then in Oslo and all the other conferences that took place subsequently. And that is, quote, dismantle the infrastructure of terror. They must show that a Palestinian state will accept its responsibility and have the capability to be a source of stability and peace for all its own citizens, for the people of Israel, and for the whole region. And what he means by that is pure and simple pacification.
Yes, Maya. And actually, Halper is very clear about the assignment that has been given to the Palestine Authority and to Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas. The role is not merely that of collaborator. They are under the direct and explicit direction of the Central Intelligence Agency of NATO security forces. They are essentially instruments of those forces. Their task is the relentless policing of the Palestinian population. As Halper puts it, we will impose apartheid. Abu Mazen will play the role of collaborator. If that doesn't work, well, there's always a reliable default. What's the reliable default? Expulsion. Now, these formulations, which are normally not articulated by people caught up in the delusion, I can only call it that, of something called a state in this Swiss cheese separation of little dependent territories, whereas another peace advocate, Rehav Deri, has stated the Palestinians will be consigned to the role of hewers of wood and drawers of water. That is their only function. But here, Maya, in Haaretz, on the 9th of November, Israel and Palestine Authority agree future deal hinges on implementing the roadmap. Now, that is very decisive in understanding what this charade of negotiations really represents. Because as the article by Barak Ravid and Mazal Mualam of Haaretz and Reuters state, the Palestinian Authority has agreed on Thursday that any agreement between Israel and the Palestinian Authority is conditional to the implementation of the first stage of the roadmap, which requires that Palestinian counterterrorism operations are total and successful. The meaning of that is that the counterterrorism operations require the Palestinian Authority to identify, round up, imprison, and deport those Palestinians who oppose this formulation. It doesn't require that they take up arms. It merely requires that they are in political opposition, that they resist the Bantustan, that they characterize the role of the Palestine Authority itself, that they explain that the function of the Zionist state is the permanent removal of the Palestinian people from any organized existence.
And, Ralph, this has always been the goal since the Oslo Conference of 1988. And let's look at, you mentioned the roadmap, let's look at the actual words that were written for this first stage of what was called the roadmap. Quote, to declare that the Palestinians must, quote, declare an unequivocal end to violence and terrorism and undertake visible efforts on the ground to arrest, disrupt, and restrain individuals and groups conducting and planning violent attacks on Israelis anywhere, end quote. The roadmap calls for, quote, rebuilt and refocused Palestinian Authority security apparatus, which would begin sustained, targeted, and effective operations aimed at confronting all those engaged in terror and dismantlement of terrorist capabilities and infrastructure. This includes commencing confiscation of illegal weapons and consolidation of security authority free of association with terror and corruption, end quote. But what we have to understand is that any objection to the Zionist state, any objection to the dismantling of the Palestinian entity, the Palestinian people as a people, anything that is opposed to the rights of the Palestinians and their struggle for self-determination, anything that supports their struggle for self-determination is considered a terrorist act. That is anything and anything, anybody within the of the Palestinian people is subject to arrest, torture, and is placed under this first stage of the roadmap.
Yes, the Haaretz piece states the following. The Palestinians must undertake a relentless series of security-related activities with particular emphasis on counterterrorism actions against militant groups and arresting all militants. To implement this program, which is the predicate of anything else ever occurring, represents a draconian process of arresting tens if not hundreds of thousands of people across Palestine. It means that the youth and that all who are not in agreement with the permanent division of Palestine into tiny little separation groups without any continuity or contiguous access to land and to resources. Anybody who questions, challenges, speaks against, organizes, attempts to formulate a different political perspective is to be rounded up and arrested. And by the way, when they arrest these people, they disappear into torture chambers. This is the fate of untold thousands of Palestinians at the present moment. The task is to have the cop on the beat, the Palestinian Authority itself, do what King Jordan does in Jordan, what the Saudi king does in Saudi Arabia, what the Egyptian King Malik Malik Mubarak does in Egypt, is to be the enforcer for imperialism and, in this case, for the Zionist state.
And, Ralph, this is what has been going on in place consequent to the establishment of the roadmap, with General Dayton overseeing the supply of arms and the training in Egypt and Jordan of a Palestinian security force focused on the Fatah movement. And the idea was to take the militants from Fatah, those who had been leading the struggle, and some of them an armed struggle, to buy them off, to recreate them, reinvent them as the security apparatus for the pacification of the Palestinian people. And the U.S. has been supplying arms through Egypt, through Jordan, and with the approval of the Zionist state. This has been military equipment and funding and training the Palestinian forces. The idea is to have a presidential guard, a police force, and a small army.
Maya, every article about this in the Israeli press emphasizes this point. Here again, Barak Ravid in Haaretz. Future deal must be based on first stage of road map. That's the predicate of Annapolis, as for all these talky talks. Again, Palestinians must undertake a series of arrests, counterterrorism acts against militant groups and militants. And the Israeli political spokesperson state, the Palestinians have agreed to this formula under which they must fulfill their obligations in this security area prior to any move to a next stage. So, because after all, they will never have succeeded in arresting everybody in Palestine to the satisfaction of either the Israelis or their CIA overseers. This is a formulation for permanent repression, and response from the population to the repression will be shown as evidence that the PA is not in good faith, is not capable of implementing the peace plan, as it will be called, and the stage will be set for the underlying plans, which are a new war in Gaza and a new round of expulsions of the Palestinian population.
Ralph, let's refer. The PA is the Palestinian Authority, and what you mean by a new war in Gaza is that in June, Hamas staged what has been called a coup, and essentially the Palestinian Authority is now in two segments, with Fatah being in charge in the West Bank and Hamas having full control in Gaza, because in the Palestinian elections that took place, Hamas actually was the victor. And the reason is because the Palestinian Authority under the Fatah leadership has been for the population an instrument of corruption and an instrument of subordination to the Zionist state and imperial designs for the Palestinian people.
The head of security in Gaza, Dahlan, was running torture chambers. Every single activist, political opponent in Gaza, families who simply didn't bend the knee sufficiently, who attempted to cross into areas that the Israelis didn't allow. Any of these people were disappeared under the authority of the Palestinian Authority. The whole population of Gaza turned against this example of Gauleiters, of the Quislings, of the Palestinian Authority doing the police work of the occupying
power. So the vote for Hamas was not a vote for Islamic fundamentalism. This was a vote in objection to the role of the PLO with the State of Israel and imperialism in the larger sense, and also the fact that Hamas had set up social service agencies while the Palestinian Authority was complicit with the Israeli designs to starve out the Palestinian people. If you're not a resistance organization, as the PLO was first set up to be, whatever its bourgeois nationalist form, it was a resistance organization. But when you eliminate yourself, when you redefine yourself and you're no longer a resistance organization and you're not out to fulfill the aspirations of the people, then you are going to be eliminated from history.
Well, in essence, the position of the Palestine Liberation Organization in embracing what had been rejected by every variant of Palestinian political expression since the inception of Zionist colonial settler plans to conquer and colonize Palestine had been as they were in South Africa during the 450 to 500 years of European occupation, as they had been in the European occupation of the Rhodesias of Algeria and so on, had been that the colonial settler population was not entitled to usurp the land, that self-determination meant sovereignty for the oppressed population who had been colonized. And that is the predicate of every moment of Palestinian resistance to colonial settler occupation in Palestine. Here is why, in the Jerusalem Post, Internal Security Minister Avi Dichter stated, this is after Annapolis, a final status deal will not be reached by the end of 2008, and he states, because the first stage is the roadmap, and the Palestinians have failed to implement the timetable over the past 2 years. According to the minister, that timetable wasn't realistic. It's not realistic today. It does steer us in the right direction. By the end of 2008, what we will know is how they perform. How they perform in implementing the roundup of the population, the crackdown on the militants, the vast prison camp to be now administered by the Palestinian Authority. Annapolis has thus been the beginning, not the end, of a new series of substantive effort, says Condoleezza Rice. But what that series and substantive effort is to compel the Palestinian Authority to take off any mask of pretended representation of the population and to turn itself into a Gestapo from one end of the West Bank to the other. Nothing short of that.
And, Ralph, let's look at who the United States assigns to the task. As I mentioned before, U.S. General Keith Dayton is in charge of the so-called benchmarks. And the person who is going to be the Middle East envoy now, although that's not his official title, his official title is the advisor to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on the, quote, development of the Palestinian security services. And that is the former Marine General James Jones. James Jones is not just a former Marine General. He was the top military commander of NATO from 2003 to 2005. And prior to James Jones, earlier in the Bush administration, there was another Marine general who was the Middle East envoy, and that was Anthony Zinni. So we have here U.S. military generals who are used as the mediators, who are used as the representatives of the imperial powers in Palestine.
Maya, the joint understanding that was required of Olmert and Abbas, which was supposed to have been agreed upon as the parties were arriving by helicopter in Annapolis on the morning of the presumptive conference, did not occur. Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni, according to Israeli sources, handed a document to Abbas and stated to him, "The time has come to sign." Well, of course, the signing required that he accepted Israel as a Jewish state and that he agreed that the first and required prerequisite was to dismantle the terrorist infrastructure in the West Bank and Gaza, something that Abbas could not possibly agree to without immediately coming up against his own population, which he knows so well. What Abbas said was that he needed time. He balked. Then Condoleezza Rice pulled him aside, quote, and convinced him to do so. So the puppet proceeded to allow his strings to be pulled, and he put his imprimatur upon his obligation to carry out a vast anti-terror counterinsurgency roundup of militants across Palestine as the primary prerequisite for anything further even being discussed in relation to this charade in Annapolis. He said, this is George Bush, sums this up. The Palestinians must show the world that they understand that while borders of a Palestinian state are important, it is the nature of a Palestinian state that is just as important. He called on them explicitly. You must dismantle the infrastructure of terror. That is the absolute prerequisite for anything further occurring in relation to the question of Palestine in the Middle East. We hope that this will be the culmination of your legacy for the world. This is Abbas speaking to George Bush. We hope that this will be the culmination of your legacy for the world, a world free of violence, persecution, and fanaticism.
And
this is Mahmoud Abbas speaking to the butcher George Bush. It puts one in mind of Mark Antony in Julius Caesar when he turns to the corpse and says, "Oh, pardon me, thou bleeding piece of earth, that I am meek and gentle with these butchers."
This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Not Peace, But Pacification, The Imperial Facade for Annapolis. Ralph, you were speaking about the charade at Annapolis, and I want to mention a quote that appeared in an article in the Asia Times, an article by Mark Perry and Paul Woodward. And in it, these two authors quote Elliot Abrams. Elliot Abrams, a top person in the U.S. administration. And he had a breakfast meeting at the White House, and in which he met with a group of Jewish Republicans. And he said to them that they should not put too much stock in the efforts to pressure Israel to reach an agreement with the Palestinians. And what he is quoted as saying is, pressure on Israel was all for show. And this was presented by a congressional staffer who was familiar with the meeting. And then Abrams went on to say that the purpose of the meeting was done, quote, just to satisfy the Europeans and Arabs. You know, we have to show that we're doing something. You really shouldn't worry about it. Charade. Annapolis is charade because on the ground, what has been taking place is the further occupation and the further conditions on the ground to create the situation where the Palestinians either on their own leave because there is no economic viability in order to remain, or there will be staged transfer of the population.
Well, Maya, the Majd plan, as it has been called, is an action plan for the Palestinian presidency that had been hammered out in secret between the Central Intelligence Agency and the Zionist state on the one hand and the Mahmoud Abbas puppet arrangement of the Palestinian Authority on the other. They were necessary components, as it were, of the plans of imperialism for the region. And over the past 12 months, the U.S. supplied guns, ammunition, and training to Palestinian activists to bring down Hamas in the streets of Gaza and the West Bank. Egypt and Jordan assisted with arms deliveries. The architect of the project, Elliot Abrams, described by the Asia Times on January 8th as the last neocon standing, is winning his fight to provide the Palestinians with enough rope, he hopes, to hang themselves. U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor Elliot Abrams, who Newsweek described as the last neocon standing, has for seven months now prepared the United States and Israel for the destruction of Hamas and for an all-out war against the population of Gaza. Abrams greeted a group of Palestinian businessmen in the White House with talk of a hard coup against the elected Hamas government, the violent overthrow of its leadership, with arms supplied by the United States. Abrams was adamant. The U.S. had to support Fatah with guns, ammunition, and training so it would destroy Hamas in Gaza. While those closest to him concede that Abrams' words were issued as part of what is called hard coup talk, it was hardly just talk, I'm quoting. Over 12 months, the United States supplied an absolute armada of guns and ammunition to the Fatah activists to fight Hamas supporters in the streets and alleys of both Gaza and the West Bank. These activists were trained and graduated from two West Bank camps, one in Ramallah, one in Jericho. Rifles and ammunition are a virtual torrent, The Israeli daily Haaretz reports that the U.S. designated $86.4 million for Abu Mazen, President, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas's security detail. The program went out unnoticed and unreported upon in the United States press, although talked openly about in the Arab media. Thousands of rifles and tens of thousands of bullets were poured into Gaza and the West Bank from Egypt and Jordan, a resupply effort continuous in fulfilling the Palestinian Authority's commitment to dismantle the infrastructure of terrorism and establish law and order across the West Bank and Gaza, according to a U.S. government document. Officials thought that the weapons would easily cow Hamas, who would meekly surrender their offices, that they had just won an election. It did not happen. The program under attack throughout the Arab world aroused the population of Gaza. This is the unstated operation of a all-out real state terror undertaking in Gaza. The population cut off from food, the population cut off from electricity, the population cut off from water, while a relentless slaughter was unleashed.
Ralph, it's referred to as the Majd document. Al-Majd is a Jordanian weekly newspaper, and on April 30th, Al-Majd published the story about the 16-page secret document called An Action Plan for the Palestinian Presidency, which we were able to find on the internet, the actual document itself, that called for, as you stated, undermining and replacing the Palestinian National Unity Government by strengthening Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, building up his security forces under his command, and leading to the dissolution of the Palestinian parliament, strengthening U.S. allies in Fatah, and then calling for new parliamentary elections that Abbas would then stage. Now, the Majd document was acquired from Jordanian intelligence. It was a Jordanian government translation of a U.S. intelligence document that was obtained from the newspaper from a Jordanian government official. Now, this the Jordanians quickly went to censure the Majd newspaper, stopping the presses. But there was such an uproar because simultaneously with the Majd publication, planned publication of the action plan for the Palestinian presidency, there appeared in Haaretz details of the U.S.-sponsored, quote, benchmarks for agreement on movement and access. And these were an acceleration benchmarks document that had been prepared by General Dayton as well as the Consul General for the United States in Jerusalem and the U.S. ambassador to Israel. And this called for dismantling some security obstacles and checkpoints in the West Bank to allow increased access. But it also had the appearance that the benchmarks was conjoined to the Majd document, that is the accelerated position of the United States, its action plan for the Palestinian president. In other words, a quid pro quo. Of course, Israel objected to the benchmark, that is, lifting the security, making the flow of the population easier through the West Bank and allowing some access to work within the Zionist state, that is, Palestinians who go to work within the Zionist state. And this never took place. But part of this was, as you mentioned, $59 million in direct congressionally approved, that is by the U.S. Congress, security assistance. That is money to the Palestinian Authority to increase its security force. The total prepared by General Dayton is $1.27 billion, and most of it is for security, operational expenditures for national security personnel, developing the institutions for training centers for the security personnel, and so on. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the DEPCA report on December 3rd, it makes very clear what we're witnessing here. Defense Minister Ehud Barak orders military to expand Israel's counterterror operations in Gaza Strip. Now, this is right in the aftermath of the Annapolis conference. They have delayed, according to DEPCA, the major operation. They've ordered a major expansion of IDF operations in the Gaza Strip, and they are preparing, they've postponed the major operation because of the last week's conference in Annapolis, because they want to have a little time in which to establish that the requirement of the Palestinians to implement stage one of the roadmap and to round up everybody across the West Bank and Gaza has not been accomplished, and that therefore the full-scale invasion by the so-called IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, a sick euphemism, will be put into play. Last Wednesday, Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Gabi Ashkenazi approved even deeper IDF thrusts into Gaza Strip and the preparations for the major onslaught are well in place. This is the game for which these photo opportunities such as Annapolis are a public relations screen and cover.
And Ralph, as you were mentioning, they are starving the population of Gaza, and an Israeli human rights organization took the issue, that is GISA, it's an Israeli human rights organization, took it to the Supreme Court of Israel, and the court ruled that the state's plan to reduce fuel transfers to the Gaza Strip, it's okay for the state to do it as long as it takes humanitarian needs into consideration. In other words, they said that the state had to have a plan so that the hospitals would be allowed to have some fuel, but it was okay to cut off fuel. And that's exactly what happened. With the 150 gas stations in Gaza, more than 100 have shut down because of fuel shortages, and water has been cut off because you need fuel to run the water plants, and there is a terrible humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip.
Yes, Maya, let's look at what is happening on the ground through the very course of this so-called Annapolis Peace Conference. Here is the Yahoo News, Palestinians feel pinch as Israel privatizes the crossing. See, they're just doing a handoff. Every time they purport to be lessening the roadblocks and the checkpoints and the apparatus of kidnapping and disappearance and control, what they've done is to hand it off to death squads that are wearing a private, like Blackwater, garb. I swear to God, the soldiers were even better than this, a Palestinian mumbles, as Israel has transferred control at the Shafar Ephraim crossing in the West Bank to private security companies earlier this year. A terrible procedure has taken a turn for the dramatic worse. We're held far longing at the crossings. We arrive at 4 a.m. and reach the Israeli side at 7, said Mahmoud from the town of Tulkarm in the northern West Bank. Shar Ephraim is one of 20 crossings that have been privatized across the area. The Crossings Authority in 2005 oversees the privatization process. It's not answerable to any peace process. It's not answerable. It's not nominally done by the government itself. It's essentially a sleight of hand to expand and intensify over 400 roadblocks and crossings, 33 crossings with high-tech security. 30,000 Palestinians pass through these particular checkpoints daily, and the terror and the disappearances now proceed in a private uniform as opposed to the army uniform itself.
And let there be no doubt that expansion of settlements, that is the Israeli occupation of the West Bank, is increasing. We found a very interesting article that was the Palestine Solidarity Campaign discovered this article. It appeared in The Guardian on November 16th. Homes in Illegal Israeli Settlements for Sale at the London Expo. It's by Haroon Sadiq, and as I mentioned, it appeared in The Guardian. Israeli companies are using UK property shows to sell housing in the Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank. And it referred to, these are real estate auctions and real estate expositions that take place in London and in other places in the United Kingdom to sell homes in the Zionist-occupied West Bank. And in one of these, the Anglo-Saxon real estate website listed 67 new building residential properties in Mal Adunim and six in Maccabim. There are 30,000 residents already in Mal Adunim, and they were selling new homes. The idea is to connect all these settlements, and these are primary settlements that move out from Jerusalem into the West Bank, and it's part of the E1 plan, which sees thousands of housing units as well as industrial and tourism zones connecting the settlements with Jerusalem. So here you have this incredible exposition. There's a free property guide called The Key to Israel. Now, what's interesting about this Key to Israel property guide that's distributed in the United Kingdom is that it contains a map. The map omits the so-called green line, that is the demarcation separating the Zionist state from the West Bank and Gaza, and substitutes Hebrew names for now existing Palestinian cities. The Palestinian city of Nablus is labeled Shechem. That's just one of the examples. Ralph?
Yes, Ma. Well, now, New York Times reports, Abbas calls for ouster of Hamas gang from Gaza. We must topple this gang, Mr. Abbas said in a televised speech on Thursday, delivered from his office in the West Bank city of Ramallah, to observe the anniversary of the symbolic November 1988 declaration of a Palestinian state. He stated, before any national dialogue will be resumed, the first task is the overthrow. Now, this is the elected government of not only of Gaza, but in the West Bank itself. This must be overthrown. That, of course, is the secret plan, the Maj plan on the ground. We can see with all the clarity that we require that, as Uri Avneri described it, the Annapolis conference is a joke. It is a blank sheet for the intensification of occupation and for the preparation of an even wider war. And indeed, the interesting predicate is, as Ehud Olmert demanded, before any negotiations, the Palestinians must recognize Israel as a Jewish state. And this declaration was followed by a declaration of the Deputy Prime Minister and Minister for Security Affairs, Avigdor Lieberman, who had stated that all Palestinians should be drowned in the Dead Sea. Lieberman made it explicit that not merely does the Palestine Authority have to implement all of these measures, but right behind them will be the Israeli Defense Forces. Wherever they appear to falter, that will be the beginning of an all-out assault by the IDF aimed at ethnic cleansing.
And, Ralph, lest people think that Avigdor Lieberman is an aberration, this is not so. An article that we discovered by Michael Brown, December 14, 2006, refers to a visit by M.K. Avigdor Lieberman to the United States, where he spoke at the Brookings Institutions, the Saban Center Forum in Washington, D.C., and introducing him was none other than Henry Kissinger. He chaired the session for Avigdor Lieberman, and Kissinger himself had made a case for moving the Palestinians out of the Zionist state, and he did so in the Washington Post December 3rd, 2004. In exchange, he said, quote, some 5 to 8% of the West Bank, Israel would transfer some of its current territory to the Palestinian state, and along with that transfer would be the transfer of significant Arab populations from the northern part of Israel. Such a transfer would be symbolically more significant, but also would ease the demographic problem. Note this, this is Henry Kissinger referring to the Palestinian population in their own homeland as a demographic problem.
But now let's look at this, Maya. Lieberman, on a platform with Kissinger, outstripped Kissinger with what is called the force of his rhetoric. Drowned Palestinian prisoners in the Dead Sea, as reported in Haaretz. 90% of the Arabs have no place in Israel, so they will take their packages and go to hell. Now, this is in the presence of Kissinger that he is making this declaration in Washington. And then the deputy prime minister, the second most popular politician in Israel behind Benjamin Netanyahu.
That is, Lieberman was then deputy prime minister.
Yes, Maya, he is currently the deputy prime minister and minister for strategic affairs. His party, Israel Beitanu, holds 10% of the seats in Israel's Knesset. Without it, the government falls. When Lieberman spoke, he spoke in the presence of Bill and Hillary Clinton, the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, welcomed Avigdor Lieberman in New York on December 12th. It's not the first time. In 2002, Senator Hillary Clinton met with Benny Elon of the Moladet Party that calls for the transfer of all Arabs. Representative Jane Harman, the very Jane Harman who's introduced the anti-terrorism and radicalization legislation that allows anybody to be rounded up who was accused of aiding and abetting terrorism, and that includes animal rights people, 9/11 truthers. It even specifies our friend Richard Gage with his architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. The same Jane Harman backs the Sabon Center's invitation to Lieberman. And at that meeting, Lieberman was joined by Condoleezza Rice and by the congressman from the Bay Area, Tom Lantos. So this formulation of Lieberman, the underlying politics of the Annapolis Conference for the expulsion of the Palestinian people, is the real gravamen of both imperial and Zionist politics in the area. And the Zionist press, the Israeli press itself, cannot and does not conceal this reality. Gideon Alon in Haaretz on October 13th, Yisrael Betanu, a member of parliament, calls for the expelling of anti-Israel members of parliament. That is to say, a member of parliament who is a Palestinian Arab is defined as anti-Israel and should be expelled by definition. And meanwhile, as the Washington Times reported on November 30th, while all of this charade proceeds, the settlers continue to dig in. On the same day that Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert committed Israel to a settlement freeze in Annapolis, the heavy bulldozers were moving the red earth around the concrete foundations for 32 luxury duplexes and garden apartments at this settlement. Nothing has changed. "Are you looking for an apartment?" asked the site worker. "We started 2 months ago. We have government approval. Who knows? Maybe they'll freeze construction in Annapolis, but we won't stop." And indeed, this forced march on expansion of settlements is occurring across the West Bank. Peace Now, the Israeli settlement watchdog, stated, "Active construction has been escalated in 88 of Israel's recognized settlements and in 10 outposts. Even if they announce the freeze tomorrow, thousands of housing units at various stages of planning will be put into place." So, as always, on the ground, the settlements expand, and the population of Palestine is increasingly dispossessed of its land.
And, Ralph, not only that, but the construction of the so-called separation barrier, this 30-foot wall that has been going from north to south, it continues on, so that the United Nations itself produced a report that said that the lives of 230 Palestinians in 67 communities who are close to the fence have been impacted. Only 18% of some 30,000 West Bank farmers who used to work their land, they are now cut off, and they need permits in order to reach their fields, and they must cross through these onerous transfer points. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs looked at 15 communities with 10,000 residents, and they said that they're trapped between the fence and the Zionist state. 52 communities with 220,000 residents on the Palestinian side of the divide, that they're hemmed in villages. They require permanent residency permits, with those on the east side of the fence needing Israeli-issued visitor permits to reach their lands or to visit their families who lived in these enclosed communities. The fence, which was started in 2002, was considered by the Zionist state, they called it a security tool that was meant to keep out Palestinian attackers. But what it has, in fact, is it sliced off 8.6% more of the West Bank land and incorporated 380,000 of 450,000 Israelis living in the West Bank, that is the settlers, the occupied, the illegal settlers, and it incorporates them into the Zionist state and prevents the Palestinians from having any contiguous land in order to have even the semblance of a mini state. There are 67 gates so far in the 200-kilometer stretch of this fence. 19 are open daily to those with permits. That's 19 of the 67. They're closed at night. Another 19 are also open during special harvest seasons. So you can see here that practically on the ground, there is no possibility for any Palestinian entity. All you have is the pacification, the Palestinian leadership functioning as prison guards.
Maya, the American press may be reticent, but the Zionist press is not. Here is Haaretz with respect to Lieberman's views on the Israeli Arabs, that Israel will redraw its map and exchange the Palestinian population to create a homogeneous Jewish state. He told Army Radio, "We will safeguard Israel's character as a Jewish and Zionist state. There is no other solution, and this separation entails expulsion everywhere the world over. No matter if it's the former Yugoslavia or the Caucasus region in Russia or Northern Ireland, where there are two peoples and two religions, there is friction. Israel has no alternative but to exchange this population and to create a homogeneously Jewish state." Referring to the Nazi era term of Judenrein, describing an area from which all Jews are removed, Lieberman said, "I don't understand why the Palestinians deserve a state which is Judenrein. We obligated ourselves to create a Palestinian state clean of Jews, to evacuate settlements, and the Jews are then from there to create a homogeneous state. While we're supposed to have a binational country? Minorities are the biggest problem in the world," he stated. "Citizens of Arab descent will be forced out." Deputy Prime Minister of the State of Israel, in charge of security affairs, the point man at Annapolis, the real character of the Zionist state, as Uri Avneri said, if it is true, the Israeli government is planning a huge expansion of the settlements, and the army, another bloody war, this time in Gaza.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman, brothers and sisters. We'll continue with the unmasking of the charade in Taking Aim next week.
Well, it's been Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Not Peace But Pacification, The Imperial Facade for Annapolis. It will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net.